Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about... the great metal semiconductor insulator misconception. I want to talk about this because it's something that's incorrect, but it's taught at schools, and the problem is that the exam questions are set to it, so you've got a choice, which before, I suppose, I just really said, look, there are just so many problems, this is the least I have to worry about, so I just dutifully... I didn't even mention that something's incorrect, because if I mention something's incorrect, students just don't learn it whatsoever, and they just fall apart and don't compete. So I'm at this dubious position that I've been teaching this as incorrect, and as an examiner, I've just sat at a table and people have said, this is the way it is. If the students write this, they get a mark for it, or marks for it, and it's incorrect, and you got a choice there. You've got a job to do, and you've entered in the marking at a point where it's been reviewed in syllabuses, and at no point has the teaching system ever responded to scientists who talk to them. If a scientist phones up the education department and says, look, this is not correct, they just simply respond, oh, we have our own experts. So I know this is not a very good thing. I'm telling you this in advance, so as I describe it, you might recognise it. But it might be, I don't know how large this misconception is. But the conception goes like this. In a conductor, there are many different energy levels. Now, there's not an explanation precisely why there are many different energy levels. And so an energy level is it's a concept that people have, that inside a conductor, in some sort of way, there are these shelves, and you can put electrons on them, and the electrons fill from the bottom shelf upwards. So the shelf may have capacity for 10 bottles or electrons. So the electrons are bottles, and you've got 50 bottles, and you fill them from the bottom shelf to the top, and there'd be this hand waving story. So of those shelves, you've got 50 shelves, and this is what you'd definitely say. The electrons are physically there, and they physically fill each shelf. And so this is sort of the lowest cognitive load way to basically get a student to draw conduction somehow as these shelves. And these electrons, so they would draw a lattice of ions, and say electrons fall into that lattice, and between the ions there's nothing, there's just space, void, which is the Drude model from 1901. It lasted from 1901 to 1901. It was read by certain people, but definitely didn't enter mainstream science, except it's entered education. And this is the idea: there's a lattice of nuclear charges that we've discovered. That's how metals order themselves, and they have a sea of electrons. Just talk a bit, distract them, and say, "Well, these electrons all have different energies." And that is a bit like a gas, would be explained. It would be explained that metals have an electron gas. Now, this is so far from the truth, it's not funny. But and the electrons are like gas, like gases in a bottle. Electrons are in a bottle of of the metal. This is, like completely incorrect. So if I've got a gas bottle, I can put so many gas particles in it, and they will bounce around inside in a metal. The gas bottle is the actual. This is a misconception, okay? The metal array of positive ions, and the electrons don't feel necessarily the field of positive ions, and they're just swinging around, bouncing at random inside that that bottle. Now, this unfortunately is the key misconception which we teach, and that's it. And it's a sort of a sealed universe in that. That's what we teach, that's what we examine, that's what we give marks for. And if you do anything else, you are disadvantaging your students. But this is a podcast, so let's look at it. And now, in that metal, for some reason, hand-waving reason, the electrons know that there can only be so much, there can be so many slow electrons, so many slightly faster electrons, and it builds up like that. And so they say, look, this famous physicist said this, that there's an exclusion principle, the Fermi exclusion principle. It limits the number of electrons you can store at any particular energy. Okay, there's actually no theoretical reason for it. And these electrons, these electrons are... fill up, and so even at absolute zero, for some reason, when everything is very still, these electrons will still bounce around at a high speed through this. So you can freeze this thing, and the electrons never slow down, which is actually true. However, it's very hard to visualize. Now, what actually happens here at this point in time, your gifted students who have the capability to imagine are disadvantaged. Your students who can rote learn answers are advantaged. And if they can, because it makes no logical sense, the only memory way of doing it is actually hitting the books and learning it over and over again. And eventually, if you've got a cohort of students, the students with a higher inquiry are disadvantaged overall. So here we are. And what we say is, with no explanation, that I have a system of I have a system of 10 shelves and 50 electrons. And if it is that the band gap, and there's no explanation of what the band gap is and why it is, if the band gap is really small, those electrons can, under the influence of an electric field, be promoted from shelf 5 to 6. And once it's in shelf 6, it's got no neighbours. This actually hurts me to even say it. It's got no neighbours, so the electron, if it's a bottle, and say that shelf's got a slight angle, can then roll. So imagine the bottles are not standing up there on the side, and the shelf's got a slight angle with the electric field. This just makes me puke thinking this. Those energy levels can have a tilt on them, right? And the tilt on them means that they can actually, go figure, okay? This is what you have to teach the kiddies. The energy levels are not straight lines, they've got a tilt, and that sort of makes sense almost, in terms of their higher energy as they're closer to, if they're negative, their higher energy next to the negative plate, and it's got a little tilt, and you put it up there, and they roll. There's nothing more absurd than this, and they roll across. So, a metal, there's no gap between 5 and 6. In a semiconductor, there is a small gap. And a semiconductor has a process that There's a small gap, so normally the electrons can't, with very low energy, move up. And so as you increase the temperature, you can actually cause some of the electrons to jump from the fifth shelf to the sixth shelf, and we call that electrons physically jump. So in quantum mechanics, the way that would happen is that the electron is a distributed entity which goes from one crystal to the side of the crystal interface to the other, expands thousands of electrons, it's got a particular shape, and the electric field changes the shape of the electron, and the electron with a new shape has new energy levels. But no, we've got the classical electron. The electron is a point-like particle, which people dispute exists, and just laughable. And as that point electron physically disappears from the universe, close your eyes, everyone, and reappears on the top shelf. What's it doing between there? Well, we don't know. I think people would say Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, all that type of stuff. Complete guff. You really don't know. And, of course, you can't actually get that happening by a photon coming in, exchanging a little momentum with the electron. Electron changing shape, conforming with the electric field coming in, and moving to the... the photon, the electron itself, staying in the same position, but achieving greater energy moving up. So this is sort of internal photoelectric effect which can actually move it there. And that's in your semiconductors. And what you can do is that you can have 49 or 48 electrons in a P-type. If you have group 3, or if you've got group 5, which are the phosphorus and the other things like that, you can actually have a excess of electrons, which is n-type, and actually have 50 plus 2, like 2 electrons in the top, and those 2 electrons, if you tilt the shelf, will roll. And it's just amazingly crass and thoroughly incorrect. It's got nothing to do with solid-state physics. It's just a fairy story which you tell people. And you go through this basic thing, and if a scientist comes along and says, look, there's a good set of reasons, can I listen? They get slowly shut down and moved out. Which I think there's a couple of reasons in my area. But in my case, I'm podcasting, and I've done, 400 podcasts, slowly improving each time, I hope. I hope it's easier to listen to me as I'm going along here. I'm actually doing quite well in this cardiac walk, so it's not likely that I've come across this. My first podcast, I haven't gone gunning for errors. But really, after you've done everything else, you've only got the error to really go. And so we've got conductors, semiconductors, and now what we do is we have a very large mysterious gap appearing between between the actual 5 and 6, and that's so large that the temperature can only lift the electron so high up. The temperature puts energy to the to the lattice. The lattice bumps the electron. The electron can't bump up, so it can't reach those energy levels. And that's the band gap. It's a forbidden area. There's actually no energy levels in that band. And that's an insulator. Now, really, that's a whole lot of guff. Now, let's go in to it. There's a bit of effort to actually get. Let's start off. So normal silicon that you buy, pure silicon, amorphous pure silicon, doesn't have a band gap. Band gaps are a property of a crystal of silicon. That is, band gaps are the result of energy levels moving around. So at a particular energy that's selected, a sweet spot energy, the electron will have a wave function, a macroscopic wave function, which corresponds in frequency, spatial frequency, to the spatial frequency of the lattice. And so, at a point where the actual Rayleigh wavelength of the electron, macroscopic electron, mind you, macroscopic electron, which extends over thousands of atoms, okay, so let's get this straight. The electron is the size, a single electron is the size of thousands of atoms. It's a, in a molecular orbital, that's what it means. The electron is there. It is simultaneously, not simultaneously, it is large. It's the size of thousands of electrons. And it's crinkled cut like a chip. And as the number of crinkles change in that stuff, so the crinkles really add up one at a time. You've got to have it not crinkly at the end of the crystal, so it goes across. And a band gap is the phenomena of a crystal. All right, it's a cooperative thing, which involves not pointing at the periodic table. What is the band gap? That's crazy. Okay, it's the band gap is caused by a cooperation of thousands, millions of atoms line up in just the way to sup on an electron, which is changing its ripples, and when its ripples hit the spacing of the lattice, the electrons are on average closer to the nucleus, the nuclei. So the electrons, which are negative, are on average closer to the positive ones. And so the frequency of the electron is sweet and actually sits there, and the electron, the band energy drops due to Coulombic attraction. That is, that in your crystal, the energy level drops due to the electron being on average closer to the nucleus of thousands of atoms. So, you know, there's nothing further than a random electron bouncing around as a gas. An electron is a macroscopic. When I say macroscopic, it's big. You can actually see it with your naked eye, because if you're looking, say, at silver, a silver spoon or anything which is metal, you're looking at macroscopic electrons. Each individual electron is very thin, but on average, if you look at billions of them superimposed on each other, they look silver. Silver is the colour of the electron, or the light which is reflected. So light reflects off electrons, thank goodness. So here we are. A band gap is a something not made of the periodic table. It's only allowed at certain points in the periodic table, but it's not a fundamental property of silicon. If it was, I could just get any lump of silicon and just, how's your father? Let's go off and let's make a crystal. No, we have to make a perfect crystal of silicon to make a band gap. Now, if the crystals, if it's non-crystallized, or if the crystals are actually short polycrystalline, if they're small, the band gap will be less. So if I have a crystal which is, say, hundreds of atoms wide, the reflection won't be as much. In fact, what happens is that it hits the sweet point where it on average is much closer, but then as it hits a resonance, it's just a small thing and it tweaks away, and the next energy level is quite repulsive. And so what you have is you go up to imagine 1,000 energy levels to make it a bit easier, and around energy level 450 climbing up, the 451st doesn't increase as much. It might be imperceptible. It may only step 0.99, but towards, as you keep on going, it may only step 0.5 point thing, and eventually it will step nothing. And depending on the size of the crystal and your structure, you'll have a decent band gap growing up, and it's the reflectivity of it. Now, there's certain things, that is, the actual shape and size of your nuclear potential. If your nuclear potential isn't sweet and small, you're going to not have the fact that the electron mismatches there. So carbon, for instance, has a large band gap for a carbon crystal. The band gap is big. It can be so big because for the size of a standard crystal, you can actually the actual Fourier component, the nucleus, the effect of the charge is far more closely matched to the nuclear wave function, whereas in silicon there's more electrons, more positive charge, there's a lot more going on. And so even though it's on the right structure, it actually is not as a severe effect. So the severity of the band gap is due to the nuclear electron charge distribution. That is, that an electron ripped away from it provides a much more intense repulsion. So that's why you get the band gap, and the band gap is that next level across there. And so looking at it, that's what a semiconductor is. It's so anything where there's anything which has a molecular electron, and the electron is free to move throughout the lattice, is a metal. However, that metallicity is frustrated when there is no energy levels for it to go to, which is a semiconductor. Insulators, right, like molecular insulators like plastic, like glass. Glass is a fantastic insulator, my friend, because there's no way the electrons can work out how to get through it. You know, it's just, there's no structure for the electrons to form a molecular potential. So that is a genuine insulator. You can have molecular van der Waals, things where the electrons just have no business roaming out through the lattice. So both metals and semiconductors have electrons which can roam throughout or span billions of atoms. And therefore, because they span billions of atoms, you can pull one electron out at a time across there, even though conceptually it's hard to go. It's just that semiconductors are metals which the conduction process has been frustrated. Insulators, carbon is a semiconductor with a big band gap. So phenomenologically, it's carbon diamond is an insulator, but it's still, by definition, in terms of structure, a semiconductor, whereas an insulator doesn't have, metals and conductors, metals and semiconductors have molecular orbitals which span the entire macromolecule, whereas insulators like, say, ice, I don't know, you can name thousands of things which the electrons just don't have a wave function which spans from one side of the bloody thing to the next. So let's move on here. And so what's going on here? They say if there's no band gap, well, if there's, I don't know, so the size of the band gap is to do with the shape of the iron core, okay, and that reduces the size of it, and the band gap increases with a greater crystal size. It's nothing to do with the fundamental structure of it. Now let's move off further off to it, and then you've got insulators. Now let's really look at what this band gap diagram is. There's a sort of fundamental miscomprehension about what a band diagram is. Now, a band diagram is viewing a three-dimensional diagram from one dimension. So, I don't know. There are these people who can't perceive three dimensions. I actually have met one or two people, and they just say, look, my brain does not process stereo information. So it's sort of like always looking at the picture of a house, a cartoon drawing of a picture of a house, and never realizing that it has any volume inside it. So that's what these band diagrams are. Now, let me walk you through the band diagram. So let's do, we've got energies and semiconductors. Metals and semiconductors are the same thing, except a semiconductor is a metal which has been frustrated in conduction by a band gap. But the band gap is a contrived, man-made thing. Okay, so your normal silicon doesn't have a band gap. And it just makes me froth at the mouth. Okay, and then you've got your insulators are not just metals with insulators are just not carbon. Insulators are anything which doesn't have a molecular orbital which goes right throughout the crystal. You know how we do it. So now we're on to what is an actual fact, the band diagram. How come people draw it and they never explain it? Well, can I say people never stop, go to university, pick up a solid state book and work out what's going on. So let's start off. Energy's in the vertical axis, and we're going to start off here that the side axis is momentum. Now, for some reason, people got this confusion that the horizontal axis represents the horizontal position within a crystal. Well, yeah, okay. It's just complete guff. It can do in composite, but simply it doesn't. So we're going to start off slightly differently. We're going to start off with the side view of your band diagram. So imagine you hold up your sheet of paper with your band diagram, hold it flat, and look at it from the side. I'm talking about what it looks like in three dimensions, i.e. that it's not paper thin, it's actually got a life into your piece of paper. And that life into the piece of paper I'm going to call the z-axis, which will be the momentum axis. And what we have for electrons, a simple law that the energy of an electron is proportional to a half mv squared or a half p squared on m. That's your energy. So if you've got a zero speed electron, it's got zero energy. If you've got an electron traveling at a reasonable speed, it'll extend up as a parabola. Now, in this case, the parabola can go from the negative axis, negative momentum and positive momentum, the electron's going to be travelling towards you or away from you. If it's travelling away from you at 100 miles an hour, it's got the same energy as travelling towards you. You've got a parabola, and it can only have certain momentum states, and each momentum state increases by value of h, the fundamental quantum mechanical currency unit of our universe. That's the way it is, and it all works out. So that's what h is all about. It's saying it's quantized, and that's how it's quantized. So the electrons have quantized momentum, right? They have quantized momentum because the momentum state corresponds to their electrical state. The electrical state corresponds to their position, and their position is limited by either end of the axis of the crystal. So I've got a crystal, say, a cube of 1,000 by 1,000 by 1,000 electrons. That's a billion in the American money. Oh, gone are the days where a billion used to be a million million back when I was a kid. The British Empire has gone with you Americans. Thank you very much. Okay, so I've got that. The electrons have to finish, and because they have finished, they're limited on quantum states they can have. They quantize, and just the way that they quantize, they have a momentum increment of h, right? So they can have any energy they want. They're not quantized in energy, they're quantized in momentum. Now, what happens is that when the crinkliness of that electron, the electron is in that box, it doesn't know where, or particularly care where, the positive charges are. But when its crinkliness hits the crinkliness of the lattice, something happens. The energy of that electron with that momentum actually drops. It's actually got Coulombic benefit of that wave function, and it drops. And so what happens is that you have this parabola. So if you imagine the parabola, right, energy vertical, plus or minus momentum, with zero momentum in the center, it's a parabola, obviously, you can do that. And that particular energy level, where the geometric shape of your actual spatial shape of your electron, so your electron is not a dot, it's now a big wave function, right? And when it reaches that wavelength, it interacts with the lattice, and its energy level drops. So your parabola is coming up, and then it tips over like a bowl. So you can have a cereal bowl. Your cereal bowls are like that. It's got a lip on it. And then when it hits the resonant frequency, it then jumps up to say, bugger me, I need much more. Sorry, that's swearing, isn't it? It's supposed to be swearing in, it's not really swearing in Australian language. But it says, look, I'm going to the next higher level. So there's an energy gap. And that gap there is a band gap. And the next energy level is suddenly much higher. The next momentum is just one change in wavelength, and it suddenly changes, flips, and jumps, and it's of much as 1 or 1.5 EV. I've forgotten what silicon is. I think silicon's 1.5 at the max. Now, if you've got very small crystals, you've got a very small effect. The gap won't get there. You only get a gap coming up if you've got a lot of crystals contributing to it. So you have to do it. And so what you have is this thing. It's, I suppose, coming down. You can have multiple energy gaps, but it's coming. It starts off as a parabola. Then that parabola is coming down, and it curves up. Coming from the negative, it curves up, levels off, drops down to this cereal bowl in the center, which then curves up, lips up, jumps up, and then travels off in the parabola again. So this is a bit hard to do. Could we make it simpler to look. So what we do is we cut the cereal bowl in half, right? So the cereal bowl is not three-dimensional, it's a two-dimensional one. We cut it in half and we crank, we move the minus section, we translate it over and over and keep on shifting it over till it actually hits, it forms a curve which looks like a hill. I don't know if you could do that in your head. See, it curves like a hill. And then the other one is just now a big gap. It goes down like a ski ramp going up, and there's a big gap, and then the ski ramp continues up. What we're going to do is we're going to crank the other one all the way across. And looking from the side, you now have a hill going up and a valley above it. And that, my friend, is a view where the actual valley of the top one goes on the crest of the bottom one. That's called a direct band gap. If, however, you have a crystal structure that there's a momentum change associated with it, i.e. a momentum change, that band gap becomes an indirect band gap. The actual top of your hill is either left or right of the top of your the bottom of the valley above, and depending on where your electrons are, you can actually have holes that but not enough in the bottom and up the top, and so you can have something which looks the same from your textbook view, but it can be a direct or indirect band gap. So that's all important for the actual structure of things. So I hope you've stuck with me so far. So just to recap, absolute complete brain draining things to actually talk about electrons as bottles and slopes and electric fields causing the shelves to roll and the electrons which are bottles roll out. If the students have had any intelligence, they ask these questions and they show real, genuine insight. And as a quantum physicist, you're going, oh, this is really hard, yakka. Now, what we've done in New South Wales, I don't think we're teaching this anymore. Too hard. Okay, so let's come. So you've seen it from the side, and you now know that we now rotate this, and what is the other direction? Well, in quantum physics, your horizontal axis on your page is quantum number, your degeneracy number, and when you're looking through your page, you're actually looking at if you hold down, it looks like a oh my goodness, that's another huge possum going up here. Okay, you're looking at it from the side, so it looks like a two-dimensional. But if you get a sheet of paper and get the top of it and make a hill out of it, so you get the top of your piece of paper and the bottom piece of paper, and you push it together such that it makes a hill, that's your bottom curve, you reach down on the desk, it looks as though it's just two-dimensional. You can see from the side, it's not. But the important thing is that the front of your band diagram, see, your band diagram represents two, if not four, electrons. Okay, so you've got one for each point in your band diagram. If you put your pin on my diagram, so each little circle in that band diagram is a single point. It's a single point because it's got a quantized momentum, a counting point of momentum. You can put your pin through it and say, that's my momentum. But what does it actually look like? Well, it looks like a very big thing. So so even though we represent an electron as a point particle, it is a point particle, or it is a point in momentum space, because it's got quantized momentum. It's not a point in spatial state, because there's nothing quantized about its shape. You know, it's not, you know, it's a Gaussian shape, it's a long extended crisp shape. That's, what is that shape? Well, that shape is that shape. However, the momentum of that shape is one value, it's one point. So, looking at your bandgap diagram, if you actually look through it, is actually each point there represents a total of four electrons. The front of it, of your diagram, the front surface, and there are surfaces, right? So that's not just a band which is filled, it's a surface. And the front of your surface, as you go through, is travelling to the right, and you go through to the bottom, and it's travelling to the left. And when I say four electrons, well, you've got spin up, spin down for it. So you've got to include that. And so if you create a hole in a in that thing, i.e. remove an electron, that says that I have an unbalanced situation. I have electrons, I had talking about three electrons, spin up, spin down, left, and spin up, spin down, right. Now I've only got one spin up, left, and I've got spin up, spin down, right. Therefore, that hole doesn't have to actually physically move. In fact, that's just an absurdity. You don't have the electrons changing momentum, changing other quantum numbers to go. The degeneracy to move it actually doesn't physically move anything. And it doesn't change the momentum, and electrons don't infill. They don't. That's complete guff about the hole being filled by nearest neighbour. That's completely insane. And now, that being said, you can't tell a student that. You've got to say, well, what has your tutor told you? What do you want to believe? And you have to advise them what's best on an exam. It's a standard state of affairs. Does it really change anything? Well, there's one thing, it doesn't teach them anything about what's happening in physics. The physics is perhaps beyond them. It really is probably a negative situation that they spend time studying, and it creates a drift, a situation where the information just can't get through through it, because it's fundamentally incorrect. It puts a quantum physicist at difficulty to actually explain it. But what you can do is you can actually see where they are and see where the exam is and give them the fundamental stories, which is DECPAVE, which I've talked about previously, in the exam, when you're asked to explain it, you say that electrons physically move up above this energy gap. You've never required to explain what causes the energy gap. You learn in for the exam, you learn that the conductor, semiconductor, insulator story. You have to rote learn it, and there's a whole series of other things. What I want to do is close off by talking about a semi-metal. So I think a semi-metal would be bismuth and other things like that. And this is where you have an indirect band gap. You have to have it. But the actual band energy is such that it's lowered. You have a lowering of the energy level of the next set of energy levels, and you have the energy gap such that in three dimensions you have, looking in the two dimensions you have an overlap, but looking from the side you've got that valley, and the top of the conduction band actually drops down. And so as you see, you have electrons on two, there is a band gap in there, but it's hidden, it's indirect, and the actual, gap is negative, But as far as the electrons concerned at the top of your Fermi surface, there's no issue about gaining energy. There's no band gap above it. There is some sort of band gap, but that's deep inside the middle. And I think you can actually probe that with radio waves and other things like that. But I'll have to get to it. So that's a long story. I'll have a look here. And I've been talking while it's going here and there. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.